Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't forget our Tuesday lunch partner here on Cody and Gold over at Pearl Tavern and Lee's Summit. $2.50 fish and shrimp tacos, $5 Harris margaritas with premium Jose Cuervo silver, all part of the Summit Hospitality Group. Love partnering with them as well. Check out Pearl Tavern. I told you, I've eaten there a couple times at Lee's Summit. Great spot for lunch, great spot for dinner. Check them out as our Tuesday lunch partner.
1 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you earlier today. JJ Piccolo, Royals general manager and an executive vice president of baseball ops, joined us. You'll hear our conversation again with him coming up in about 30 minutes or so. We asked him point blank about the future of Salvador Perez in Kansas City. I think you'll like his answer if you are a Royals fan. Plus, just looking ahead to the offseason a little bit. They aren't mathematically eliminated, but I think there's obviously a realization of what would have to happen. Chaos, pure chaos and luck is what would have to happen for something to happen in the next couple of days, final week of the season. But let's get back into the NFL and the Kansas City Chiefs. We go out to the Big Apple. Nate Taylor in New York over the weekend, or New Jersey, I guess, specifically. Nate, our Chiefs insider from ESPN, we appreciate it, man. It looked like you had maybe the family out there as well. Are you back, or have you landed yet?
No, gentlemen. I am I'm still here in the Big Apple. Like you said, I'm actually looking at my family right now. We're at the Walt Disney Studios here in Lower Manhattan. So it's a great day. We fly back home later tonight. So it's been a good trip. My kids have done great.
Out of the, how would you rank this win for the Chiefs, knowing it's a bad opponent who just benched their starting quarterback, but they did win by a comfortable margin at the end, but also had maybe one of the worst quarters of offensive football I've seen them play in 5 years. So where do you kind of rank this win for the Chiefs?
It was a must win. I know the guys didn't say that. They didn't want to sort of lean into that storyline, but it was a must win. So, hey, you won. And I think even the bigger, sort of the better the news is, and Andy Reid told us this yesterday, even though Brad Cook had an injury, like, they came out without any serious injury. You won the game without feeling like you needed Xavier Worthy to be in the lineup, even if it was on a limited basis or, a small snap count for him. So the defense, I know this is not necessarily, the biggest headline, but the defense has made incremental progress through these 3 weeks. And that's a very good sign considering how young they are, especially on the back end, right? You still have Brian Cook, who's your most experienced safety. You have Tamari Connor, who's played really well these last 2 weeks. They actually got turnovers, gentlemen. So, hey, what are you supposed to do against a bad football team? Dominate them. And the Chiefs dominated the Giants basically for 50 of the 60 minutes. We could sprinkle in some of those nonsense, I don't know what's going on with Isaiah Pacheco. I don't think anybody does within the organization. But, hey, you won the game. I know they could have remind me, fellas, they could have potentially scored, as much as 26 points, I guess.
Yeah.
If Harrison Butker had made his extra point and his, 40-yard field goal-ish. But, like, ultimately, it was a must-win. They got the win. And now they get to have this nice little three-game home stretch where they could actually say, hey, maybe we're, a team that can get better throughout the course of the season. That's really all that matters now. And so getting a win is what's most important. And thankfully, they didn't have any major injuries considering what, the turf at MetLife Stadium is, what its reputation is.
Were you surprised when Xavier Worthy didn't even make the trip and was ruled out? I know we talked last week and most people believed he was going to play. Was this, they're just being really cautious? Was it, I don't think they were in the position to you know, sit a guy out that could have helped him win if they really wanted to, or am I way off on that? Because the Ravens only have three plays, I guess, of Xavier Worthy this season to look at. Maybe that's an advantage going into Sunday.
No, it definitely is an advantage. And, yeah, I got the sense that this was all out of extra precaution, right? Could he have played Sunday against the Giants? Yes. You know, I know he was limited in practice all the last week, and, hell, that might even be the case these upcoming days. But, again, that's all just to sort of protect the player from himself, to give him as much time and as much health rest as he needs. You know, I don't know, you know, because of the shoulder, how much time you need for it to, like, sort of stabilize and find, you know, your strength again, and how are you going to protect yourself going down. I know some of the turf, because we just saw it with Tracy, right? I mean, Tracy dislocated his shoulder, you know, and part of that is because there is less give on that potential turf more than anywhere else in the NFL. So MetLife, you know, you could have added that to the equation. But I think the Chiefs also realized too, like, hey, we've just got to win and get right with the guys we have right now. And then we can sort of add, you know, Xavier Worthy into the fold. Obviously, Rashee Rice is a couple weeks away as well. He'll be in the meetings, you know, as early as today, right? As early as today in terms of getting the playbook, understanding where the offense is right now based on what, you know, he saw in training camp and in the preseason. So, yes, he could have played. The indication I got even on Saturday, even though he didn't make the trip, was he's fine. So, hey, if you can borrow an extra 7 days, why wouldn't you? And, guys, I mean, considering what we just saw last night, if Xavier Worthy gets one little area to blast through and show off his speed, the Ravens are a team that has struggled stopping explosive play. So having Worthy and Tyquan Thornton on the field together should be a nice combination for Patrick Mahomes.
I want to go back to the wide receivers here in just a minute, but you mentioned Harrison Butker. Financially, there's nothing to be done. Is he hurt?
Right. I saw your tweet on it.
Well, I mean, financially, there's nothing to be done, but, like, is he hurt? He was terrible. He was not terrible. He was below average, a below average NFL kicker last year. 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, he was a below average NFL kicker. Over the last 5 years on aggregate, he's a below average NFL kicker, if we exclude the postseason. But the 2 years he was the worst, he missed three games because he was hurt. And now he seems off again this year, and he's dropping to a knee. Is he hurt?
This was the biggest concern when he had surgery towards the middle of last season, because even though he did all the right things, I think from a rehab standpoint, obviously he came back and did very well in the postseason. That's one of the best things about Harrison Butker is, like, you know, can you wake him up when it's January, February, and he won't miss? But because he had to go on down to a knee, and because he had the knee surgery, he's obviously dealt with, you know, some ankle injuries in the past. It's like, okay, well, you can clean up your technique, but what's going to happen when it's actually games, when it actually matters, when there's real juice, there's real consequences, whether this kick is a good or not. And we're starting to see that he's basically, you know, went back to his old form. And again, I don't know if that is sort of due to pain. I don't know if he's trying to manage his accuracy, but, like, not have as much power, because I think that's what he tried to do in training camp is, hey, how do I get my accuracy to be even more precise? If I have to sacrifice based on me getting older, you know, I might have less power in my legs. So I don't know what's going on, fellas.
Something's wrong.
I mean, the last thing I was going to say is these are makeable kicks, especially for him, especially given his reputation. I want to remind everybody, he's never been an all-pro, even though his numbers suggest he should have been an all-pro. He just lived in the era of Justin Tucker. So Justin Tucker's not in the league right now. Like, you're the highest paid kicker. Like, you should be the guy sort of taking that mantle of, hey, when my team needs 3 points, regardless of the situation, I'm going to make it. That's why it was so confounding for him to do a great job on the, you know, emergency drill. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's get it up right before halftime in Sao Paulo. And then his very next kick, he just blows it wide right. And you're like, wait, what's going on? So his accuracy concerns me, because that's what he worked on in training camp. And again, I don't know if he's hurt, but we're starting to see a residual effect of what has occurred over the last 2 years, which is why I think it's noticeable to ask that question, given this team needs every single point right now without Xavier Worthy and without Rashee Rice. He just compounds the issue of the offense. And that's one of the reasons why Travis Kelce kind of went crazy over at Andy Reid in the second quarter. It's because, hey, we just got our first turnover of the year. We're on the plus side of the field. We can't move the ball because, you know, the play stink. And oh, by the way, our kicker is struggling right now. He just missed a kick. So what did we just do for the last 7 minutes? I think that's ultimately my interpretation of what Travis Kelce was getting at Andy Reid. And part of that is because, hey, man, we can't even trust this guy or this guy, whether he's dealing with an injury or not. This guy's not as reliable as we need him to be, considering how much our offense is sputtering at times.
The sideline blow up, whatever you want to call it. You said it. I think we kind of know maybe what was going on there. I think a lot of people, including myself, were happy to see Andy Reid kind of, you know, push back a little bit. At the same time, I don't think this is like a huge deal. I will only say Travis Kelce having it happen every single week is kind of, at this point, I think people are kind of done with seeing.
Well, he's the only guy, guys. I just want to make this very clear to the audience. He's the only guy that can do that. He's the only guy. And you know what? Andy Reid does not have a lieutenant worthy of doing that. That, I think, is one of the clear differences. Whenever we get to the discussion, and I thought about this Sunday night, whenever we get to the discussions of, like, is it EV? Is it Nagy? Is it Nagy? Or is it Eric Bieniemy? Well, Eric Bieniemy was a guy who was willing to get up in you-know-who's grill. And most notably, he would always point out Travis, or he would always point out Patrick, and let that sort of filter down to the players. Well, that's not Matt Nagy's style. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. It's just not. So where can Travis Kelce go to light a fuse to where he thinks, hey, I need to do something psychological? Well, the only guy he can go up to and do that to is Andy Reid. And he's the only player, maybe Patrick, but again, Patrick's more deferential, more reverential to Andy. Because Travis has been there the longest, and because there is no Eric Bieniemy to sort of have a tit-for-tat moment, because believe me, guys, they had several of those, if you remember. He knows, hey, I got to wake this guy up. And I don't know if that was truly necessary at the time, because, again, like, it should have been a 9-0 lead. Hey, Bucker misses a kick. It happens. But, hey, you're still moving well. But, again, my interpretation is, hey, this don't feel good. I don't think these play calls are great. How can I get my guys, like, going? Well, hey, I know who's got 51% of the vote. It's the head coach. You know what? I got to do it again. I'll do it again. I'll get up in his face, and maybe I need to wake him up, because it was just 3 weeks earlier where Andy Reid said, hey, I needed to wake my players up. I mean, partly due to the fact that, oh, no, here we go again with a, you know, freak accident injury between Travis Kelce and Xavier Worthy. So it has been a strange season, fellas. Of course, we all know Patrick Mahomes has led the team in rushing. We all know that they sleptwalked through the first half of Sao Paulo and then had an amazing second half. So, hey, give credit to Andy Reid for getting the offense to get back on track. But also, like, hey, man, this is a must-win game. And for whatever reason, but your star tight end is just like, I don't love this. I don't know where we're doing. What are we doing? Like, what's going on? And so now he pushes Andy. And then, of course, they come out in the second half, and they are an actual professional football team that matriculates the ball down the field for two touchdown drives. They could have had a third if Patrick hits Taekwon on that nice flare release, you know, on the short yardage play. It's a weird bunch, guys, but they also know, too, when you don't have the explosion, when you don't have the guy that can get you easy yards or break tackles, it's got to come down to, is the coaching right? Is the scheme right? Are the play calls being sequenced in a way that we know we have an advantage? Well, if Travis Kelce don't feel like that, then who is he going to talk to? The only man he can go talk to is Andy Reid.
Let me just ask you about, like, I guess, as it relates to the offense, because I'm going to, for just the purposes of giving them the benefit of the doubt, ignore the 4,000 times they said the same thing last year and just take it for the 3 times they have probably said it this year. Patrick and Andy continue to insist that this offense is close, that there are things that are, and again, I'm just going to ignore that they said that a bunch last year and it wasn't. And instead, I'm going to focus on this year. Do you think there are parts of this offense that are close? That there are things that will work, especially once Worthy and Rice come in? Or is this just them saying that and buying time until we can actually see if it works with all the players in play?
I think it's probably the latter would be my guess. One of the funny things about last year is, you know, they were expecting so much out of Hollywood Brown. And then, of course, he got injured on literally the first snap of the preseason, right? So he didn't come back till December. And so I thought a lot of what they said last year was, hey, man, we're not going to have, at any point in the season, because of the Rashee Rice knee injury, we're not going to have our 3 wide receivers. Well, that's kind of where the offense was entirely built on. And we kind of promised Travis, hey, man, we're not going to run you into the ground again. Sorry, bud. Hollywood got hurt. Rashee got hurt. Please give us another, like, you know, lead the team in receptions, lead the team in yards. hey, stay healthy, obviously, and then like come find us in January, and then we'll put it all together. And actually, that is what happened. Like, the offense did really, really well around Christmas because they got Hollywood back, because Kelce had managed himself through the season, and obviously Xavier Worthy grew so much in his rookie year. Well, now, is part of it is like, okay, the offensive line, I do see improvement. I saw plenty from Kingsley Suamantaia to say, okay, this experiment is going. But now, what do you do with Juwan Taylor? Like, he's the one who's disrupting the offense more than anybody else on the offensive line now. Yeah, there's the one holding penalty from, you know, Josh Simmons, but that's going to happen. He's a rookie. He gets a lot of grace. But he and Kingsley have done really well in terms of run blocking. They did pretty well in the second half when the Chiefs made some adjustments to have a more quicker passing game. I don't know if it's going to reach its full potential because, again, like, how much longer are you going to give Juwan Taylor? Like, what's going on with his knee, basically? Because there were times where he got beat Sunday night, fellas, where I was just like, hey, man, that doesn't look like you. You're a really good pass blocker. Why are you getting overwhelmed basically at the snap of the football? So, again, will we ever see a snap of Hollywood Xavier receive?
Still waiting.
I don't know. So, I mean, they don't – like, if the Chiefs cannot run the ball successfully against a Baltimore Ravens defense that cannot stop the run, then I don't know. I don't think they're close. What they have is a really good schematic coach in Andy Reid who can sort of find ways and re-tinker things and adjust things and have, you know, curve balls and, you know, change-ups to the snap counts and everything that way. You have the best quarterback on earth. You still got a really talented tight end who has shown more athleticism. I know he wasn't involved much in Sunday night's game, but, hey, that allows Tyquan Thornton to have the best game of his career, right? So it was a pick your poison, and the Giants said, please let Tyquan Thornton beat us, and he did. So,
right.
I mean, I understand their viewpoints, but I'm not sure I completely trust it because there's just so many things that are weak on the offense right now that, boy, a lot would have to change before the trade deadline. And, again, how much are the Chiefs willing to be in the trade market? I don't know, guys, but keep looking at running backs. Keep watching the film because the blocking and the holes are there. It's just the running game and the right tackle play is probably the two biggest things that you should be concerned with in terms of whether or not it's actually going to get fixed.
We're talking to Nate Taylor, our Chiefs insider from ESPN. That first drive to open the second half was their best drive of the season. It looked completely different, not just because they had success, but they went under center a little bit. They did some misdirection. You know, Breshard Smith was in the game for a couple of the snaps as well. Do you think that they will look at that and we should just some of those elements they will be willing to go back to? Because that was when they were at their best. It was different than what I think they really want to do, but that was when they were at their best.
Yes, and I'm so glad you mentioned it because Patrick realizes now, I think, more so than when the season started. And this tells you how much things change in the NFL based on injuries, based on, hey, what we thought we were good at, look at the film, not true, guys. What they did in the second half was, okay, we have to be a balanced, spread them out offense that is capable of, again, doing a long drive zero down the field. Hey, we'll get you 5-6 yards out of pop. Hey, here's an occasional 10-yard play. You know, they now understand, again, even with Xavier Worthy, you know, expected to come back and play against the Ravens, this is not a one-man offense anymore. It's not like, hey, I'm the Minnesota Vikings quarterback, and where the hell's 18? That's where every play starts, right? That's not the Chiefs' offense right now. So you have to use Tyquan Thornton. You have to use Breshard Smith. I really love the idea of them just, hey, Nico Remigio, run some jet sweep motions just to get the safeties and the linebackers to look somewhere, right? And maybe we'll give you the ball, maybe we won't. Hey, we gave him the ball, he got 10 yards. Congratulations. We have used you to your best abilities for this one play that helps us get down the field, and, oh, there's Juju Smith-Schuster on a slant. I don't know what they're going to do with Jalen Royals, but, hey, maybe Jalen Royals can be someone who can work within the intermediate area. You still have Tyquan, you still have Xavier over the top. You're going to have to use more screens. I thought that was a sort of an acknowledgement of weakness. Like, hey, we might need to throw a couple screen passes to Kareem Hunt because you know what? He's actually pretty good when you get him out in space and he can at least, you know, carry some defenders forward for 1 or 2 yards. They have to be a spread offense. They have to be a balanced attack. The more guys touch the ball, that includes Noah Gray, the more unpredictable they'll be and the more you trust your quarterback to make the right decisions on a down-to-down basis. he has one turnover this year, guys, and it ain't even his fault. So they could run this offense for another, again, 3 or 4 weeks before, hey, if Rashee Rice gets back to his top form, if he's coming off the suspension well, okay, maybe he's the focal point of the offense. But until then, they need to spread it out, trust everybody to do their job, and that will actually hold everybody more accountable because you need to rely on all 11 guys to move the ball down the field, regardless of the opponent.
Last thing from me, Nate. Percentage chance that Juwan Taylor is not the starting right tackle come Sunday? I mean, I'm saying Sunday. Let's just say this Sunday and then halfway through the season. Because at some point, for a team that claims accountability, I don't know how the most penalized player in the NFL who is actively costing you drives can continue to start at right tackle.
And not only is he the most penalized offensive lineman, I know people were making fun that NBC has a graphic for him.
Oh, I know, man. They had it ready to go. He's also not.
They had that thing. I said, my God.
For what it's worth, Nate, he's not blocking well either. It's not even like the previous where like he was playing well.
Yeah, that's my point. He did not. Sunday was a bad game for him, blocking wise, regardless of the penalties. And so, again, he had his knee scoped. He had a little procedure. You know, they always call them minor. They're not minor kids. he had a procedure in the offseason. He had to get his knee drained. But last year was a different circumstance because they had no one else. You know, it was like, hey, can Wanye do it? Well, I'm sorry, Wanye's playing left tackle now because Kingsley can't play left tackle. You paid this guy in free agency. I still think Andy, I know people don't want to hear this, I still think Andy wants to see one more game. I always say, guys, and you know this, give me 4 weeks. I know it's so hard. Give me 4 weeks of a season. 4 weeks is a decent enough sample size before you might actually want to start making changes, or what teams do, you know, post a bye week when it's like, okay, we have 6 or 7 games on tape. We actually know for sure now, based on the 6 and 7 opponents we've seen, we not good at this. So, hey, the Ravens didn't get a sack last night, fellas. Didn't get a sack. Didn't sack Jared Goff, who cannot move. So, I know fans are like, I want to see Jalen Moore. I think Andy probably gives them another week, or it might be a situation like what teams do with the quarterback often is, hey, give us the bye week. I know that's a little farther away than now, but they paid a lot of money for Jalen Moore. I know, but if they made the change, I would be surprised, because I just know traditionally how Andy has sort of operated with these things.
But I've watched him, Nate. Like, we were talking about LeSean McCoy earlier with fumbling problems. Like, I've watched him put players on the bench eventually who are actively costing them games. I'm not sure why Juwan has been more immune to it than others. And again, last year, to your point, what choice did they have, right?
There was no option
but to stick with Juwan Taylor. So he got way more than a normal amount of games, I would say, for a guy struggling as much as he was. This year, it's like you invested in it. I think Simmons, especially in isolation, has been excellent. I think Kingsley's been better than I was anticipating. So, like, Juwan's the odd man out. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. Kingsley has the tools, and we are now realizing that. It's just something that, like, Trey Smith went through in his first year. Obviously, Trey Smith was an All-American, but, like, you have the tools, you have the athleticism. Now it's about technique, consistency on a down-and-out basis. As you get more defensive fronts, as you see more defensive linemen, right? Josh Simmons, you couldn't have asked for a better starter from a rookie left tackle coming off a knee injury, right? That ended his college career, so he's played excellent. Here we go with Juwan. Okay, Juwan, well, when you do start on time, or when the refs let you get one or two, you're pretty good at just, stabilizing the right side. That allows Mahomes to scramble, maneuver within the pocket, maybe extend plays. Well, there were plays where he couldn't get to his drop on Sunday because Juwan got beat faster than we've really ever seen him in a Chiefs uniform. So, again, I don't know if that's injury-related. I don't know if that's to deal with the same knee injury he had last year, or if it's just one bad performance on top of, penalties that this offense cannot overcome. The issue I have is he is a veteran. He's done it before. Yeah. It's just 3 games. I just want to remind people, it's just 3 games. And what decision you make in terms of moving him away doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go back to that player in, like, November. So if you make this change, you're making it for the rest of the season. And I think that's something that people have to understand. It's like the coaching staff knows what it looks like at practice. They watch the practice. They watch the film. Jalen Moore, as I like to remind people, has never played right tackle in the NFL on a regular basis. He always was the backup left tackle to Trent Williams. So that would be a new sort of role, a new situation for him, even though we all know he's talented and capable and got all of the training camp or preseason reps he could in case of such a scenario. But if you make this change now, it's not like you can go back to Jawan Taylor and say, oh, by the way, we're playing the Bills now. You ready to get back in there? I don't know if that's a decision that they can make to where you want to be flip-floppy or you want to be sort of even more inconsistent when an offensive line needs to gel over the course of the season.
Nate, safe travels back, man, from the Big Apple. We'll see you in studio next week. I'll see you out on Arrowhead on Sunday.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to it, guys.
There you go. Good stuff from Nate Taylor, our Chiefs insider from ESPN. I'm with everybody. I'm with all of you on the Jawan Taylor thing. I do think the last part he mentioned is also something we do have to consider, which is we're all just assuming Jalen Moore is going to be good at right tackle.
I
understand, but to Nate's point, if you bench Jawan Taylor, it's not just a one-game thing. It becomes, no, that's the guy we think is good enough sure. for the rest of the year. And that's also part of the equation here is, as rough as it's been for Jawan Taylor, are they 100% convinced Jalen Moore is better at right tackle right now? By the way, I hope he is for this year, but also because next year, Jalen Moore is going to be the right tackle for this football team. So we'll see. It's funny. The month thing is kind of what we had talked about as well.
I felt like he's played himself. He didn't deserve the fourth week.
I think there's
I get your point.
5% chance it's not Jawan Taylor at right tackle. On
the
Sunday.
Scary thing, though, is that if Jalen Moore also is not very good, they need to draft a tackle again in the first round.
That would be the reality if that was the case, for sure. All right, up next, earlier today, the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Pecolo, joined us. We asked him point blank about Salvador Perez's future in Kansas City. You want to hear what...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
He had to say next.
What's trending?
Number one on What's Trending, the Royals begin a series out west tonight against the Angels at 8:38 first pitch here on 96.5 The Fan. Vern's on deck show at 7:30. Cole Reagans makes his second start since returning from the IL. Elsewhere in the division, a big series starts tonight with the Guardians and the Tigers. Remember, the Tigers have collapsed here. They've won 1 out of their last 10. Meanwhile, the Guardians have won, I believe, 9 of their last 10. Therefore, it's a one-game lead now after all
Insane.
That for the Tigers. If the Guardians win tonight, they will be tied, and I think they might have the tiebreaker temporarily, over the Tigers for the division lead. Crazy.
They had a 10-game lead 2 weeks ago. Certainly would be a massive collapse. The kind, I guess, that Royals fans were hoping they would be on the other end of. Very rarely happens, that's all. Next up on What's Trending, speaking of Major League Baseball, automatic balls and strikes is coming to Major League Baseball in 2026. It will work nearly identical to the challenge system in minor league baseball. Each team will receive 2 challenges per game, of which they can retain them, if they get those calls or challenges correct. As an example, Jeff Passan put out according to the automatic balls and strikes system, more than 1,000 balls and strikes are called wrong every week. Now look, that means they get a lot right, but 1,000 calls are wrong every week. It'll certainly be more than in play. As soon as we go around, he actually pointed out a game last night where somebody missed 25 calls in a single game at umpire.
That's crazy.
So automatic balls and strikes coming. Obviously, big fan. Not going to complain about it at all. Sweet.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It adds some more drama, too, because there's going to be situations where you're going to complain that a player didn't use it or did use it or whatever. Like, there's just more intrigue and strategy involved in it. How is each team going to handle it? I love it. I absolutely love it. All right. Elsewhere on What's Trending, some NFL news today. Jackson Dart will make his NFL debut Sunday when the Giants take on the LA Chargers. Russell Wilson, of course, has been benched. Also, the Houston Texans have released veteran corner C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Reports are out of Houston that among the issues the Texans experienced behind the scenes with C.J. Gardner-Johnson, he was critical of teammates in the secondary, did not like his role, locker room issue. It just wasn't a good fit for the team and for Gardner-Johnson. So just a couple moves in the NFL today. One final thing on what's trending.
Busy day.
Mike Evans out 2 to 3 weeks with a hamstring injury. Also, the Falcons fired their wide receiver coach, Ike Hilliard. They're moving their OC from the booth to the sideline. These are all like the steps in eventually just firing a bunch of people. But like, oh, we're just going to now move. That's the issue. He needs to be on the field talking to Michael Penix instead of up in the booth. It's kind of like the normal progression of everything as well.
Still surprising.
That's what's trending here on Cody in Gold. Earlier today, the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo, joined us. We had a bunch of topics to get into with him, including looking ahead to the future, but also while their ultimate goal of making the postseason and division and all that's a different story, still going back-to-back winning seasons is in play, and it would be the first time in 10 years.
It would be huge for us. I mean, that's one of our goals is sustainability, and part of being sustainable and a good team is having winning records year after year. So we're looking at these six games like they're big, big games for us. And of course, we're not completely eliminated just yet. You know, we got to win six in a row and a couple teams got to lose six in a row. Yeah. So it's a tall order, but all we can control is what we do here on out. So these next six games are very important to us.
Have you been happy
to establish some history?
I was about to say, have you been happy to see some of the fight? Because like it was easy enough. You go through the losing streak. It seems like it kind of plays you out of the playoffs. You know you can sense that, but they fought back to 500 and to stay above 500 or around there. Do you like seeing that out of a team, even knowing that the playoffs were a long shot?
Without a doubt. We had a couple games last week, and I thought we could have easily shut it down and not competed. But one game, we're up 3-0 against Seattle, and we end up winning the game late. That was a good game. Even the game we lost on Sunday, I thought we competed really well. We didn't score more runs than the other team, but that was a good baseball game, and that's what we want to do. That's what we want to establish as an organization. But, yeah, we're proud of the way they're competing, and we expect them to go out these next six games and do the very same thing.
Just briefly speaking of other playoff teams, because you're the general manager of another team, I'm guessing you're not allowed to text Freddie for me and congrats on helping send the Padres to the playoffs. Did you get a chance to see that moment last night?
I did see. I was watching the game when it happened. Couldn't be happier for Freddie. He's a Royal through and through. I know he's in a different uniform right now, but happy for Freddie. He's going to get a chance to experience the playoffs for a second year in a row, and you know, wish him nothing but the best.
We're talking to J.J. Piccolo here on 96.5 The Fan. Last week, Cole Reagan's return to the rotation will also start tonight. What did you make of that first start back, and are there any sort of limitations still, you know, tonight in terms of workload for him?
We'll still be careful with him. He's probably going to throw a few more pitches tonight than he did the other night. But, you know, you can't help but to think, especially that first inning, like what could have been had Cole been healthy all year. You know, that's a natural thought. But it was a good sign of what our pitching staff is like and what it could be. And, you know, Cole, with the year he had last year, what he was doing this year until the injury, you know, is a big part of who we are. You know, and going back to one of your first questions there, about how we've competed. We've competed extremely well without, you know, one of our top starters and one of the top pitchers in baseball. So seeing him out there last week was a great moment for him. You know, mentally, the perseverance players go through when they're injured is difficult. So I know it was a big relief for Cole to get out there and throw the ball the way he did and dominate, really, that first inning, you know, as well as you possibly could. I think it was 9 swings and misses in an inning. You don't see that. So that's how good Cole really is.
When it comes to, I want to ask you about Cags too, obviously, as he's had his second run here as a big leaguer post the injury. Carter Jensen, obviously everything he was doing in the minors, he's doing now in the bigs. He's hitting for average. He's showing some power. His on-base percentage has been excellent. Is he the kind of guy just for like looking into the future? You've tinkered with him at the top of the order. Because of his on-base percentage, is he going to be tempting to be a top-of-the-order guy for you next year?
Well, I think we got to let that play out. And the circumstance the other day was, you know, Isbell's hurt. Yeah, he played a bunch of games in a row. And we're looking at, you know, we wanted a left-handed hitter at the top of the lineup. Carter's not hit leadoff in the minor leagues. But for where we are in the season, trying to get him some at-bats, he's like, hey, why not? You know, he's taking great at-bats.
the quality that Carter has, or the talent that he has and the skill that he has, is pitch recognition. He makes good swing decisions. He's going to walk. You know, I think one of the, aside from the hits, the best thing we're seeing right now is he's not changing his approach in the major leagues. He's making pitchers work to get him out. It's a very good sign of a quality hitter. And Carter obviously has the power, too. You don't see a guy go foul pole to foul pole and hit two homers in a game all that often. It's Hoffman Stadium. And then you look at the game where he hits three doubles all through the left center field gap with another ball against the wall. Like, that is the sign of a really good approach and somebody that's going to be a quality major league hitter.
These things are obviously related. How close are you guys to picking up the option for Salvador Perez? And is that a conversation you've already had with him this offseason, knowing that $13.5 million is on your side?
Well, I think it's safe to say that Salvi's going to be back in a Kansas City Royals uniform. You know, we haven't had discussions about when we'll pick up the option or what we're going to do. There are things that we're going to, you know, through this week, have discussions with Salvi. His desires, obviously, is to be here and be a Royal the rest of his career. But there are things we'll figure out through the offseason. But I think it's safe to say that Salvi is going to be in Kansas City next year.
Yeah, obviously, you do have the offseason to figure some things out. Do you right now, when you look at how maybe you approach even just the catcher position, knowing we already talked about Freddie no longer being part of the organization, now seeing how Carter Jensen is being used, we know Salvi wants to be behind the dish. How much does that also go into some of the thought process as you look ahead to the offseason?
Well, there's ongoing conversations with Salvi. I mean, it's happened the last several years about his workload and how much he can catch. Now, when we traded Freddie, we had to up his workload. That wasn't part of the plan. He caught far more games after we traded Freddie than prior to trading Freddie. But now that we have Carter and he's gotten some experience behind the plate in the major leagues, you know, probably looking at a very similar situation as we had with Freddie, and now we'll just substitute Carter for him.
Would your thought be going into the offseason that Jack Caglione would be, our plan is starting right field 2025, that's where you're trying to pencil him in?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Is your plan to make sure that, like, to spend the offseason making sure that Jack Caglione is your starting right fielder?
Well, we'll do everything we can. I mean, somebody's, you know, players got to go out and earn those opportunities, but you know, we expect that Jack's going to be a big part of what we do in 2026. If you think about what he's done this year to come from, you know, double A to triple A to the big leagues, and he had the injury, that's an awful lot. And then throw in a position change for him. You know, just proud of the way he's continued to compete. We know that the season didn't go exactly the way we wanted it to go in the major leagues, but he's a young major league player, and we're going to be patient with him. He's going to have to earn a spot on the team opening day next year. But we know that he's a talented guy, and he's going to figure this thing out. It's just a matter of when.
Last two players I'm going to ask about, because you guys have obviously made a lot of trades for pitchers, so you'll have a lot of decisions and maneuvering there. But every offseason, I got to ask, what's the likelihood that you guys will try to work on extensions for guys like Michael Garcia and Vinny Pasquantino this year?
Yeah, they're things to be determined as well. I mean, it's always an ongoing process for us. What's best for the organization? How do we manage our payroll? Who are the guys that we know we need that are everyday players? The two you just mentioned are obviously very valuable. I think, you know, probably 65% to 70% of our offense came from those two, and Bobby and Salvi. You know, they were the key contributors, so they're important to us and what our success is going to look like next year. But they are under contract, so there's things that we need to work through. We know they'll be in our uniform. It's just a matter of whether or not we choose to work an extension or if they even want an extension. So you got to work through those things in the coming months.
That was JJ Piccolo, Royals general manager, with us earlier today. He joins us every couple weeks throughout the baseball season. We appreciate coming on the show. Let's start with the back end of the interview there, the last question, the last conversation. You and I have discussed the future contract path for Vinny and for Michael. I think you can make a case on either end of it. I've said, you know, if I were the Royals, not my money, but if I were the Royals, there's a strong argument of, well, Vinny's 27. I got control for another 3 or so years. Why would I do an extension at this point? Other than the fact that one, he's been a very good player for you. He's a fan favorite, and it's, you know,
guaranteed money
and all of that.
Doesn't matter if you get injured. Doesn't matter if you get hurt. It's a check.
Well, for the player, I'm talking about for the organization. You know, I know why Vinny would want it. Vinny's 27, Michael's 25. between the two, it's weird. Like, Mikel Garcia is coming off a career year. If you're him at one point, if you think this is what you are, then you should wait.
Year.
If you're like, if you know how much if there, there is the risk there. If I'm the Royals, there's more value in getting a deal done with Mikel Garcia this offseason than Vinny Pasquantino. And that's not a knock at Vinny at all. It's just the reality of the age and the way the baseball system works with arbitration and everything. The cost saving measure for the Royals would be more on the get the Mikel Garcia deal done. If you think this is who he's going to be, that's going to save you money. Vinny, I don't know if you're really saving money by getting a deal done with Vinny, because the buying at arbitration when he's 31, 32, 33, what kind of player is he when he's 32 or 33 years old? I don't know.
Take the chance mostly because here's why I would do Vinny first. Not that I think he's a more valuable player necessarily, or that I wouldn't be interested in both. Truth is, I'd be interested in both. The reason why I do Vinny first is that's the kind of person that is an easy lifer for a Royal, in the sense that the Royals spend a lot of time and effort and energy and draft capital and free agent money over the years trying to find a 300 guy. They do it all the time. Nothing but in constant search of this exact professional middle of the order hitter who is going to be under contract with you for at least 4 years anyway. Why not add 2 more years, lock up until his early 30s? I'm not saying lock up Vinny until he's 40. I don't know what kind of hitter he'll be then. That's a misnomer. Most major league players' careers peak is like 27 to 31 if you're just a really good hitter. So I'll risk the back 2 years, lock him up for a Royal for not life, but essentially a huge bulk of his career.
He turns 28 in October, in fairness, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, it's so nobody's worried about that now.
This is the stupidest thing about baseball.
I know. Poor he doesn't Vinny. Even have a chance to.
He can't even hit for it. If they just made him ride it out, he wouldn't even get paid until that's part of the appeal. If I were Vinny, I'll be honest, that's part of the reason I take the check.
Oh, I'm not arguing on the player side, it's a no-brainer.
But like on Mikel's side, I could understand why he'd wait a year. Like he might not just take the extension. But Vinny's side, I'd take the check if they'd give me two.
Yeah, and that's why it's an interesting convo. Because I think from the Royals' point of view, I get your argument. I would feel less urgency to get something done with Vinny.
Yeah.
For Mikel, if you think this is kind of what he's going to be, there's a reason it actually would benefit you quite a bit in the future to already have a deal done. If you're the player, though, if you're Mikel and you believe this is who you are, then you're benefiting waiting. And if you're Vinny, your benefit is to sign this offseason.
And some of this
given
is
your
like
age,
family and history and everything else. I don't know the family background of Vinny or Mikel. Yeah. Like maybe this would set up Mikel's family for the rest of his life. Maybe this would set up Vinny's family. And either way, it probably would, but you get the point. I don't know the family circumstances surrounding it and the need for it.
Yeah.
But it's just like, if I were the Royals, it's mostly just about, I'm not trying to replace the kind of hitter Vinny is.
But they wouldn't have to do that for 4 years. That is a while.
That's a good point. I'm not.
There's also the CBA issue. We've talked about that in 2027.
You're gonna lose a whole year. You're likely to lose a whole year of these players. The other part for me is, and again, you don't have to do it. Mikel and Vinny know these guys. I'm not trading them. They're too cost controlled and all this other stuff. They're not the players I'm taking calls on in the offseason.
I agree.
Because I'm keeping them around Vinny. I'm keeping Carter Jensen, Caglione, Vinny Pasquantino, Mikel Garcia, and Bobby Witt Jr. together for the next at least 3 years. That's how long I got Mikel. I got that whole group of five people under contract for the next 3 years. I love that.
No, that's a great, that is a great spot to be in. I just think it's, you know, Bobby Wood Jr., you needed to get a deal done because you know his value is only going to increase, and it did. Yeah. And so that deal looks great. Yeah, yeah. I don't think there's the urgency. At
there's
least
not as big of a jump on the other two guys.
For Mikel or Vinny, if I'm the team to get it done, there might be some reasons you would like, and certainly if you're the player, if I'm JJ Piccolo heading into the offseason, I don't feel like I have to get a deal done with either of them.
Of the two, I would argue that Mikel's is more likely to take a jump, only because the way the contracts typically work, Vinny plays first base or DH, so there's like a fixed number, and he's not a 70 home run hitter, right? He's not Aaron Judge or a 60 home run hitter. He's a very, very, very good player, but because of the limitations on that, I don't think his number is going to change dramatically. Mikel's interesting. For a guy who plays infield, he puts his feet in the dirt, those guys hold more value, and he took a huge leap forward, if there's any other kind of leap or that continuation. And because he's going to be up for a Gold Glove at third base this year. Like, yeah. I don't know.
He doesn't even turn 26 till July, till March. Sorry. Before the start of the season,
which makes him even more like, in fairness, now I'm talking myself, but like, because of how young he is, Gold, if you locked down 3 more years at the end of his, he'd still be in his early 30s. By the time you wouldn't even like, he would not be 32, 33. He'd be more like 29 or 30.
Free agent in 2030. Yeah. Right now, he's a free agent in 2030.
Yeah, but I mean, if you said to 2032, all you're talking about is a guy who is now 31 years old. It's like, okay, maybe talk myself into that. So I don't know. I don't know if they're going
to
get into those.
There's pros and cons to both. I just, like, is, you know, for the player, arbitration and the model we have is what we have. I just, there's also a reason why, as a baseball club, you just ride this thing out.
Yeah. It just depends on, like, you know, this always comes down to, too. There's teams who have done this and it's worked out because they've correctly identified the right players to pay early. And then there's teams like the White Sox who paid all their players early. And I bet wish they didn't pay any of them. Bet they wish they hadn't signed a single one to a single contract, because we could be having these same conversations. Teams have paid guys like Jack Caglione and Carter Jensen this offseason, too. I'm not saying they have to. I'm just saying there's teams who have paid guys like that.
Yeah, was it Roman Anthony that already signed a new deal, or somebody else? I can't remember who it was. Yeah. There's a couple of Basallo, the Orioles kid, just got called up. He already has a new deal, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Both of those guys. Yeah. So, like, we're talking about Michael and Vinny. There's actually technically, like, they have to have the conversations about whether or not they just want to buy up all the cheap years of Caglione and Carter Jensen, too, like other organizations do.
Yeah.
There's a huge appeal of locking up your entire core, but it is a massive risk. You could do it like the White Sox right now, and you could sign Vinny and Michael, and you could sign those other two guys, and you could just lock up 5 to 6 players.
I'll play out a full year of Jensen and Gags before I worry about that.
I would too. I'm not doing that. Teams have done that, is all
for
I'm
sure.
Saying. I'm not
for
saying
sure.
You have to.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying teams have done that. It's a risky proposition. There's no doubt about it, but it's just there. Are you, what a busy day in sports. ABS.
A lot going on, man.
Mike Gundy got fired.
Jackson Dart's starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of stuff shifted.
Yeah, it's fun. This is the fun time of the year, man. There's a lot going on. We're, you know, obviously bummed out that the Royals aren't going to be part of October, doesn't look like, but we've got baseball postseason and some big week of series going on in baseball. Tigers and Guardians. I wish, obviously, the Royals were in that spot, but that's a huge series starting tonight. And then I don't know. Who's the Thursday night football game this week?
I don't know.
I actually do know. Cardinals and Seahawks, I think it is.
Not be catching much of that.
Yeah, not a great one.
Watching much of that one.
Not a great one. But it's early enough in the year where it doesn't seem like as bad. Like they are 2-1 teams, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Overall,
at least the Seahawks are 2-1. Yeah, are the Cardinals not 2-1?
I think they're 2-1 as well.
Okay, so it's actually, for this early in the year, it's actually not bad. I agree with you. Whenever I see Arizona and Seattle on the TV, it does feel like you're about to watch a boring football game. I think there is something with the optics of that.
That part of it is tough. Over on YouTube, they asked, so before as we wrap up, here's what the Royals need to do to make the playoffs. Okay. You ready?
Sure.
They have to go 6-0, Drew. Yes. They're going to win out.
Mm-hmm.
The Rangers have to go 5-1.
Yes.
And then Cleveland and Houston both have to go 0-6. So go Tigers tonight?
I guess so. Yep. Sure.
I suppose.
Sure. Let it live for another day or two.
You know what it is? Let it live for another day. Let it be that they have to go 3-1. Texas has to go 3-0. And those two, like, give me a little life. Give me to September 26th of playoff hope.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not going to happen.
No, I don't think so.
September 23rd, and they're still alive.
Thanks to Steve Smith, former NFL wide receiver, for joining us. If you missed that conversation will be up on the Odyssey app. Also, Nate Taylor. We also appreciate JJ Piccolo, obviously, for joining us on the show. We're back at it tomorrow, 10 to 2, right here on Cody and Gold.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.